naked shamanism. Welcome to With Insights Radio. I'm your host, Iggy Garcia. I will take you on a journey across the universe through shamanism, metaphysical, and holistic. So sit back and relax and enjoy the show.
All right. Here we go. Welcome to Iggy Garcia Live. I am Iggy Garcia. I want to welcome everybody to the show. Episode 165. I labeled it The Return. So, here I am, guys. I'm back. And hopefully I'm able to give you some insight, share with you a little bit about what's been going on with me. Man, where do you start with a story like this? Where do you begin to even talk about or share, you know, your feelings and your emotions and everything that's been happening to you and everything that's happened to you in just these, since January, February, now we're into March, you know, we're close to 3 months, since things have happened. So what I would like to do first of all is just kind of take a moment of silence and just recognize all the people in our lives, all our ancestors, all the people who have helped us, all the people who work with us, all the people that we love and we care about. Just give them recognition and give them, you know, acknowledgement, and you know who you are. And it's not that I have to run off a list of people. You know, it's in your heart, in my heart, to hear that and know that, because it was a very personal journey that I took and some of you took with me. So I just want to take a moment to recognize those folks who mean a lot to me and who've been there by me, by my side. All right, so here we are. We're in March and we're almost close to spring, so things get better from here out. So for many of you who follow me here on Facebook, on Instagram, and different platforms, if maybe just bring up the speed, some of you probably know that I was really sick, you know, very ill. And some of you probably didn't even realize that I was sick and ill. But I ended up in the hospital with COVID. I had COVID pneumonia. That happened to me around January 9th, around that time, 9th, the 8th. We try to play with dates and different things. And so, excuse me. So what I want to do today is just kind of paint a picture, you know, of what had been happening just before we left 2021 and moving into 2022. And high expectations and great expectations to do great things. And we still have the opportunity to do great things in this this new year. So this is my first show in this new year because I have not been well. I'm doing a lot better. I look, you know, happy and movement, but you know, I'm still struggling with a lot of simple basic stuff. So I'm not quite 100% yet. I may look 100%. I may look like I'm pretty active and I look healthy. And I am healthy, but there's just some things that you have to go through this post-COVID moments in time. There's some residue, you know, that's still lingering in there. Your body's still adjusting and still calibrating itself. So that's kind of where, and it is good to be here, Anne-Marie. Got to say your name right. We had a conversation about that today, saying people's names correctly. But, I just, you know, it kind of all kind of started in December, you know, of last year when my sister passed away, December 1st. You know, mental illness is a very serious topic in everybody's life because it affects everybody. Everybody has or knows someone who suffers from it, and there's different degrees and there's different levels of it. And, you know, how we respond, how we react to it is basically up to us. And some people do well with it and some people don't. Unfortunately, you know, in this case, you know, sometimes the decisions we make totally change our environment, our feelings, emotions, affects our immune system, affects our spirit and our soul. There's so much tragedy that happened since 2018, losing my mother, losing my father in 2019, 10 months apart from each other, and then my sister, you know, losing her, you know, it had just been really hard. And, you know, family members coming to visit and having the wake and all these different things and being around lots of people was just been really tough. And people being sick, and, you know, the holidays brings out, you know, all the buggy bugs and stuff. And so at some point I got sick with COVID. So when I ended up going to the emergency room, so we'll start moving a little bit forward. We had a little gathering at my home that turned into a big gathering with people. And I'm very grateful that people who came to the thing, and I'm not even sure if I was sick at that time, but, you know, we're going to say possibly anything's possible. I didn't even know. You know, I didn't know until way after when my body started to feel, you know, the effects. But we were fortunate that no one else got sick that I was aware of. No one else shared that they were. But I'm really grateful for that. I'm very excited and very, you know, thankful that, you know, that myself was the only person who was sick. My wife was sick with COVID, but a different, milder version of COVID. My mother-in-law was sick with COVID, and we all kind of took that round. But I took the beating. I took the COVID pneumonia. I ended up going to the hospital. Actually, let me take it back. I didn't go to the hospital. I went to the emergency room on Fishinger Road. There's a little emergency center there from Ohio Health. And it's basically, like they explained to me, it's not a hospital. It's just like being in the back of an ambulance. And so when you go to the emergency room, basically you're just in the back of an ambulance. And I didn't know that. I didn't know that that's all it was. And that you get very limited treatment. And, you know, and that's kind of where I went. But the story goes back a little bit. I noticed around the 8th. Yes, it was around the 8th of January. I started to feel very winded. Like I couldn't catch my breath. And so I told my friend who lives with us, Amber, and I said, hey, can you get the fan out? Because I can't breathe, and it's like we need some air. And I opened the door for like 3 hours. We had the doors open, just letting air in. It was cold, and then I smelled this putrid, smelly, death smell. Like it was something that was rotting, like something was not right. And I haven't really shared this with too many people. There's gonna be a lot of things I haven't shared with a lot of people, because I really had to think about if it was my imagination or if it was real. But regardless, it was pretty real. But I smelled this, and, you know, my friend was like, she knew that I knew that I wasn't well. Like, you know how you know? And so I go outside and I sit with Lulu, take some black and white pictures. Some of you have seen that on Facebook. I just took pictures of the dog and myself, because I didn't know what was going to happen. And then later on that evening, you know, I told my wife that I need to go to the emergency room. She needs to drop me off. But let me go back a little bit. So I was thinking about that smell that I smelled, you know, and I can smell that smell when I know people are not well, and I can pick that up just because, you know, in the work you do, you learn and you get certain gifts, which is not a fun gift to have, but I'd never smelled on myself like that. And it didn't smell good. It just was like everything about my whole body was just, I felt like tons of brick. I felt like I was just one big cement block and I couldn't move. It was just like a struggle. Little did I know, I didn't know I had pneumonia, but I knew that I wasn't well and that I had to go to the emergency room. But it was just so hard. And I was talking and having conversations and speaking almost like in tongues. And my wife explained to me that, you know, what's happening is that your body is, you're getting, the oxygen is going to your brain to sustain your brain, and you're not getting enough oxygen to your organs. and basically you, things start to fail. You start to liver failure, you start kidney failure, you start to have failure because you're, all the oxygen is going to your brain to keep you, you know, alert and alive. She finally takes me to the hospital. She drops me off. I get in there and the place is packed. I mean, it was like there had to be 30, 40 people waiting there to get in there. And I walk in and I walk up to the counter and the lady's, may I help you? I said, I hope so. You know, and she's like, what's your name? My name is Ignacio Garcia, blah, blah, blah. And I gave her the wrong address. I had the numbers all screwed up. I think at that point, you know, she knew that I wasn't, my mind wasn't like, I wasn't getting that oxygen in there. And I told her, you know, I've been having a hard time breathing and this and that. I'm doing the best I can, you know, and, you know, quite frankly, it's just, you know, I had one of those oximeters, you know, that my friend Kate donated to us in one of her gift bags. And my oxygen was going down to the 80s, you know, like 88, 85. You know, you knew you weren't in good shape when you're in those 80 marks. That's, and it's not going up and it's not sustaining. And I told the lady, I showed her, you know, and she's like, oh my God, you know. So they sat me down. One guy went before me. And then after he went, they grabbed me and they took me in. Everybody else is just like looking around going, why does he get to go? You know, I'm like, I didn't know. I just got up. They called my name and I went, you know. And it was kind of a hard struggle to walk just to the nurse's station. She's like, you can say, I'm getting there. I'm just give me a second. I'll get. Just trying to find the positive outlook on this because I knew that I was in bad shape. And I knew if I worried and I knew if I got down on myself, that it wasn't going to be a good way for me because that runs in my family. To people get nervous and to kind of get, you know, like, oh. And I didn't want to be like that. My mom was like that. And I didn't want to invite that energy into my space. And I got there and I told the lady, said, you know, she goes, when did you notice? I said, just noticed when I was at home today, you know, that I wasn't getting, you know, the proper, you know, breath and everything in my lungs and blah, blah, blah. And so they took me to the back and then, of course, they inject you with steroids and they gave me one IV bag, you know. And then, you know, the steroids really kick you up. So it's like, and I was like, I felt better. So I looked better. A lot of you guys saw the video where I was in the emergency room. And I was sharing, I feel better, you know, like, yeah, we're through it, we made it, you know. And they did a COVID test, they tested COVID, and, you know, it turned out that I had COVID. What I didn't know after they did a CT scan is that I had COVID pneumonia. And they still had to, like, verify that and do blood tests and blood work on me. Because I guess the COVID pneumonia is a lot different than, you know, your standard, you know, pneumonia. It's a little different. And so, and I'm in there, you know, and I'm waiting. And we're waiting to see if I could get a room in the hospital. But nothing was coming up. And they told me, I can wait here for 4 days in the emergency room. And I was like, no way, dude. Well, they said, okay, then we need to get you oxygen. So they got me a portable oxygen. And they gave me the portable oxygen. It was a little machine you towed around. And at that point, I was going about 8 liters. It wasn't too bad. And just trying to keep a positive attitude. The next morning, they released me. The doctor calls and like, and this is when you know it's like, you got to fight for your life. You know, when the ER doctor, I said, so doctor, what's the next stop? He goes, are you going to give me anything? He goes, there's nothing to give you. He says, you have to either fight through this. And, you know, he just paused for a second. I'm going, and I was like, that's when it kind of hits you. It's like, wow. He just didn't say it, but he said it. You know, you're either going to make it or you're not going to make it. It kind of, that feeling was just like, my jaw dropped. You know, I was like, I thought I was going to get a better answer. He goes, then the nurse came in. She goes, well, they want to give you the monoclonal antibodies. So they'll call you in 2-3 days because you qualify for it. Well, finally, that was good. Good news to hear. I'm like, well, maybe that'll help me. They released me. They sent me home with oxygen. And of course, it's not the same being in the hospital, being home, even though you're trying to, you know, you're trying to conserve energy. And man, it was just everything that I, all the strength and everything that I, how I know myself to be was going out the window very quickly. and I'm very patient. Like, I'm like, oh, they'll call me. And Suze was like, have they called yet? And I'm like, no, but they're not going to call, because that's what they do, right? They're supposed to call you, right? And you know, the third day was coming up, and she goes, I'm going to call them. She's like, F this. And so, you know what? She calls the hospital, and she goes, hey, you know, my husband, no one would answer. She called again. She goes, my husband was supposed to receive the antibodies. And they go, well, he does qualify for it, but the bad news is he's past that line. I guess there's a certain time that you have to take it, and they're out of them. They don't have any more. They ran out, since there's so many people who were sick, you know, during that month. And my wife's like, why didn't you call and just say that, you know, so we can have a different, you know, strategy point, you know? Oh, I'm so sorry, somebody should have called you, blah blah blah. And you know, I was like, she can, Susie's like, do you want me to call the doctor? I said, yeah, call the doctor, and let's see if he can get us a room. Maybe he has a little pool, get us in there. So she called my family doctor and Dr. K, and Dr. K, you know, made phone calls all over. He called everywhere. He says no hospital beds. But I said, call Dublin Methodist and get me on a wait list there, and I want to go there. I don't want to go anywhere else. It's the only place I want to go. And the reason I wanted to go there is because they've always treated my family right. They treated me right with my eye injury in 2020. And you know, and then he said there was no room. He called back, he goes, but they have you on the list. And it was like hours later, like it was late, it was like around 7 they called, and they go, hey, a room has opened up, we have a room for you. And then at 9 o'clock, I said, well, I can't get there till 9 because my wife gets off around 9 or 9:30. I can't get there. And then they got me the room. They had it ready for me, and I said, don't give it away. And then Susie came, picked me up, took me to the emergency room. That's where we had to go in through. And we're walking. I said, Susie, I can't walk. And she went and got a wheelchair for me. And she, you know, and remember, my wife also is recovering from COVID too. And she's not feeling well, you know, because she still has those lingering COVID things that you get. But she doesn't have COVID anymore. And the thing is, she wheels me up to the top, and I have an oxygen tank with me, you know, a portable one, because they gave me a big machine one that sounds like a lawnmower in your house. And so I have the bottled oxygen with me, and we get up to the 4th floor, and they wheeled us around. They got us to our room, and I get in. They check my oxygen, and it's like really low. And they start pumping oxygen into me to see where my levels would pop up. And it wasn't popping up at 8, it wasn't popping at 9, and it was at 15 liters of oxygen, where it was starting to have any register of oxygen coming into my lungs. The nurses and the doctors looked at each other, and they weren't sure exactly what they were going to do with me. And the lady goes, we may have to put you on a ventilator so your oxygen levels can come down. And you know, I'm glad my wife was like turned away when they said that, because that she would just gone nuts. I said, no, you're not doing that. And the nurse, the doctor's looking at me, well, you know, your oxygen level's at 15, and it's like, I said, let me have a fighting chance. Let me try to work through this. And she looked at me kind of like, you know, like, I was like, you know, and so they did. But they knew that they couldn't give me the oxygen they were giving me. They had to give me this, like, moisturized oxygen with, you know. And so the tube is shorter, so I can't, I'm restricted to how far I can move in the room. And then they gave that to me, and about an hour or so or two later, they could tell that my oxygen was getting, it was coming down. So, I mean, my oxygen was getting better, like, but it still wasn't anywhere near or anywhere close to that. And I'm thinking to myself, man, I do not want to go on a ventilator. We got to have a strategy. And I'm thinking, talking to myself, you know, I'm having this conversation with myself going, well, we got to have a positive attitude. And, you know, and that's all we really have right now. There's no cure. There's nothing that can save my butt, you know, nothing. There's nothing Doesn't matter if I had the vaccine, doesn't matter, you know, if I had a miracle drug. There was nothing to give me in this stage of the game. You know, I had COVID pneumonia, and a lot of people don't understand what COVID pneumonia is. Basically, the doctor told me, he goes, if I hadn't come in, basically what would have happened is I just would have fell asleep like Sleeping Beauty, you know? I would just put my head down and I would never woken up the next day. That's how COVID pneumonia works. It's very silent, very deadly, and you're so exhausted and taxed, and you have no oxygen going through your blood. You suffocate in a very, it's almost like swimming, I guess. You just suffocate. That was what was going to happen to me. That's where my journey was taking me. And man. And later on, they brought in the specialist, the pulmonary specialist. And the guy goes, you know what? You're in pretty bad shape. He goes, I don't know what we can do for you other than, you know, you just stay on the oxygen for a while and see how that you pull through. But they said, we have an antibody it hasn't been, like, how do you say, approved by the FDA. But it works on some people and doesn't work on other. Because I did ask him, I said, so does it help people? He goes, some people have good effects and some people doesn't do anything. It's just like nothing happens. And so I said, okay, let's do it. I said, I'm not here for fun. I'm not here for a vacation. I'm here to get better. And, you know, the antibody, he goes, awesome, let's do this. And then, so the next day, they lined me up to take the antibodies. And the antibodies were actually specific for the lungs. They're directed to the lungs. You take it intravenously. And somehow, through the miracles of science and through the miracles of God, because God endows everybody with his abilities and these knowledgeable thoughts and things, it worked. You know, it worked, and I could, some oxygen dropped down. Like, I wasn't taking so much oxygen now, and now I was breathing a little bit less. So, but I got stuck at that little plateau mark, like at 10. I was stuck at 10 for a while until the antibodies started to, you know, kick in and work. And you know, I was there for a week, Wednesday to Wednesday, and just in my thoughts, you know, and wondering. I had no phlegm, I had no cough, I had no nothing. It was just I couldn't, you know, couldn't breathe properly, and that was where it was, because I have asthma, and so my asthma is induced, you know, with sports-induced kind of asthma type. You know, if I do extraneous work, I have an inhaler for that. But anyhow, they check on me. They couldn't get blood out of my arms. That's how oxygen deprived I was. That they couldn't find veins. They were all shrinking and busting and breaking every time they put a needle in it. And that's what was really scary too. You know, it was like, man. You know, and they were like, they brought all these machines in, and they looked and they searched. And I said, listen. Just take it out of my hands. They're like, well, we don't want you to be in pain. I said, listen, right now I don't feel anything. Like, I'm not on drugs or anything. Then my body is conserving energy. So anything that's like painful that I'm not feeling, or anything that I like have issues with, my body is not thinking about that stuff right now. And it's true. It's true, because I could tell, you know, like I have certain things in my body just, you know, naturally hurt. And then none of that hurt, because my body was focused on healing in fighting this silent killer. And so they started to pull that out of my hands here, and they had no problem pulling it out. They were just more concerned about, and you know, I talked to every nurse that came in there. I thanked them, and I said, hey, you know what, thank you very much for being, you know, doing what you're doing, and we appreciate it. So I'm like, oh, thanks, I really appreciate that. We don't get that enough here, and you know, there's not enough people. You know, it's, some people are just really, really disturbed, or not, or they're on the ventilators and you can't talk to them. So there wasn't anybody that I didn't thank who walked through that door. I even talked to the lady who cleaned my room. Her name, she walked in. I said, oh, your name's Sade. And she goes, yeah, hi, you know what that name is. I said, yeah, she's a very famous singer. She goes, yeah. She goes, how did you know that? Hey, I'm from the 80s, you know, I know, and this is like my kind of music. So I like that kind of music. So she's cleaning my room, and I put it on my Spotify, and it's playing the Sade music. She starts dancing, and she's like, oh, that's awesome. And the one song ends, and she asks, and I said, what song do you want me to play? She goes, Soulja Boy. So I put Soulja, you know, I put it on. And so I said, you know what? I really appreciate you for cleaning my room. I told her. She goes, oh, it's just my job. I said, it's like, man, you're part of the team, you know. As much, I said, you're part of everything that makes this thing work, you know. You know, I just reminded them that their value was just as important as this medical doctor and this medical team that's trying to keep all the people on that fourth floor alive and walking up, hopefully walk out the door. But only even the smallest thing, because the last day, also the lady who came to clean my room, she, you know, she didn't believe that she was a value. And I said, no, man, you're so important, because now my room's clean. I feel better. You know, it looks nice. I'm not cluttered over here. You know, my mind is free to wander and think about things. You know, so those little things that were very valuable. And, you know, I had this one, she was from Korea. She's from South Korea. And she's just like, did you eat today? I was like, oh, I didn't know. I didn't know if they brought my food. No, you have to order your own food. Just, this is the number, and here's the menu. And, you know, every day she'd come in and visit me. She's like, did you eat today? You need to eat, because you're going to be really hungry. And you need to build your appetite. Your appetite is because, you know, you're on the steroids, and you're fighting this thing, and you have to feed your body because you're. And I tell you, man, when they would come in and ask me, they go, so how have you lost taste? I said, no, everything tastes great. It's like the food tastes even better than before. I said, like, I totally fell in love with oatmeal again. Like, I'm like oatmeal crazed all of a sudden. I had oatmeal every day. I had it for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And I was always ordering an oatmeal. Because it just felt right. My body's like, we need oatmeal. I don't, you know, it just like took me back to my childhood. Because my mom used to make me oatmeal. But she used to make me these oatmeal like with milk. And they were like more liquidy and you can drink them. And they were warm cups of oatmeal. It was so good. Oh my God. I could taste that right just now. And so, you know, it was kind of one of those things. And I had a lot of fruit and had a lot of pineapples. And I'm like, you know, I was like, damn, this is awesome being in here. I took it like I was on a little hiatus for a minute. And you can tell that I was getting better. You can tell that my attitude was changing. I was really tired, though. And then I would make the videos, communicate with everybody who I care about and love. And you know what? It was just one of the things that just, you just don't know. Your mind is like, and here's what I tell a lot of my friends is, I didn't see ghosts. I didn't see ancestors. I didn't see anything along that lines. And so I knew that was a good indicator that I was in a good place, that I was going to walk out of there. Because there was nobody visiting me and going, hey, you ready to take the journey? There was none of that, you know, and I didn't really want that. I wasn't inviting that energy. I didn't want that. And then good friends, you know, made music. They wrote songs for me. They had tributes and they had ceremonies. They had prayers. You guys were amazing. When you, everybody on Facebook who was in part of any way sending me vibrations and prayers and singing songs and writing songs. My friend Putzi wrote a song for me. You know, it's good to be here. And, you know, that was so powerful. And that was so amazing. Everybody got behind in the prayers and helped and sent energy. So it got to the point where I just had to ask everybody to ask me when's a good time to send energy and to ask for permission to send energy, because it's like overloading a circuit, you know. And that's kind of what I was feeling like. Oh, my God. I was like, argh. And I really appreciate those who sent me messages, you know. Iggy, can I run energy tomorrow? Can I run it the next day? Blah, blah, blah. And, you know, that was powerful. And then, of course, I also had those people like, Iggy, don't take anything. Don't let them put this in you. Don't let them. And, you know, they meant well. I got so many crazy emails from people. Take ivermectin. Take this. Take that. Don't let them do this to you. I just like, man, you know what? Can you guys just stop sending me all that stuff? I had to say that because it was too much. My mind was trying to focus. And I believe in the power of spontaneous healing. I also believe that the human body can also heal, you know, with assistance of, you know, the things in life. Because I've seen it. It's happened to me. It's happened to others. And so my case is different from everybody's case, but in my case, I was making sure that I was trying to get the right information, the best information I could, and how I could. And you know, my wife was amazing. You know, she checked in on me, she'd bathe me, she'd take care of me, and my friend Kate called me, and my friend Anne Marie called me. You know, I had people checking on me. Chris called me, you know, checking on me, make sure I was okay. There was a lot of people, you know, who called and checked in on me. But there's a lot of conversations I had with people that I don't remember because my mind was kind of like in and out. You know, as much as I want to say that I had my faculties, I can't say I had my faculties to the extent where, you know, I didn't even know, you know, if I had a conversation with anybody at all, you know. But I know that's not true because now talking to people later on, that you know, they call me. But it was kind of like, it was really difficult. I tried to meditate and I couldn't meditate, you know, and I just kept hearing this voice, hey, we can't go out there right now. We need to work inside and listen to the internal voices of our body and what we need to do to heal. Because I couldn't meditate. I couldn't get on Facebook. I couldn't get on social media. It was like black. It was like sticky, gummy. You want to wipe it off the table and clear the table stuff. I just couldn't do it. I still kind of like that a little bit. That's why I haven't been on as much, because it's kind of gooky. It's kind of sticky and it's kind of nasty to some degree. But especially when I was in the hospital, didn't like it. But I was in my thoughts a lot. I was thinking about a lot of things, being grateful for a lot of things, just giving thanks to things, recognizing that I got a lot of things to think about, a lot of things to work about. And my mind was just drifting at times. I look out the window at the sunset, because I couldn't go very far because my oxygen cable, my tube wasn't that long. And so, you know, I was in a place where I don't know where I was sometimes. You know, I was just happy to see a face. I was happy to see Susie pop in and visit me. You know, she was a good support. You know, she challenged me sometimes. She got in my face a couple times. Not one time. She got in my face one time, and you know, just made it really real, you know, like about our relationship and where we were going to go with that and what happens next, you know. And she knew that I wasn't well, but you know what? There's still things that we have to work on, you know, like every relationship does. And so that was one of those things that was, I was thinking about in there too, you know, like, so what do I do? Where do I go from here? What happens next? You know, what happens when I leave? And I was really thinking about the commitments and the work and all the things that I've been doing all my life, drumming, shamanism, you know, restaurants, everything that I did, I thought about and just processed to the point where I was just like, I didn't want to do anything anymore. I just didn't want to, like, I didn't feel like I owed anybody or was obligated to do any more work. You know, I felt like stepping completely away. I made promises to God, which I'm still holding firmly. And, you know, I won't cower and say God or universe side by side, because in my opinion, God is everything. So God created the universe, so God is. And so if people don't like that, that's their problem, not mine. You know, that's where they're at, not where I'm at. This is about what's good for my soul, my spirit. If it offends you, that's on you. You know, that's kind of where my thinking was going. It was like I had been so conditioned to honor and respect everybody's belief systems that I wasn't even respecting my own. I wasn't respecting what I corely believed in and what I felt like doing. Or if I wanted to make a decision for myself, if I wanted to change my mind, if I wanted to live my life the way I wanted to live it, you know, if I wanted to do this or do that, because I was compromising my own well-being to appease and to please others, so people wouldn't get hurt, or people wouldn't feel offended, or people wouldn't feel violated, or feel whatever they were feeling. And I'm going, my God, I'm trying to do this for all these other people, and I'm not doing it for myself. I'm giving everybody else the courtesy and the respect, but I'm not even respecting myself. How can I do this work if I don't even respect me in the process? You know, if I want to change my feelings and emotions about something, and I don't want to do something anymore, I have the right to do that. But there was a time where, you know, I'm like, I can't quit this, because if I do, you know, I'm just letting a lot of people down. But I'm letting myself down when I'm emotionally not invested, when I'm not emotionally and my heart's not there, and when I'm faking and pretending. And I didn't want to do that. And not that I was doing that, but I was aware that, you know, I wasn't honoring my spirit and my soul. I was tired of the excuses why I can't make it in life, why I wasn't getting what I wanted to get, and why, you know, I didn't want to be pigeonholed and trapped anymore in the voices, in the things that I've told myself that this is my life, this is my destiny. I have no choice. I have to live like this, because if I don't, I won't have this or that. That changed the day I walked out of the hospital. That changed when my wife bathed me, you know, when I couldn't bathe myself, when I'm naked, you know, on the chair there, and I can't even bathe myself because I don't have the energy or the strength, you know. And I'm so grateful for that woman and all that she did for me and all that she invested in me and, you know, was able to share with me, as much as she was sad and frustrated and angry with me over things and over the course. You know, this is somebody I've been with for 33 years, and she's seen different versions of me. She's seen the 20-year-old version Iggy. She's seen the 30-year-old version Iggy. She's seen the 40-year-old version Iggy. Now she sees the 50-year-old version Iggy. As much as I see her 20, her 30, 40, and 50. Those are amazing stories. Even though I'm kind of the same person, but I'm not the same person, because you evolve and you grow, or you stay stagnant, or you don't go anywhere. Your mind expands, you know, because you just gain so much knowledge and information that you just want to share it with everybody. So 20-year-old Iggy was in a much different place of working on things, is now the 50-year-old version of myself is planning other things that needs to be done. But I'm grateful to God, Creator, to God, because you know what? In my personal opinion, I got a second chance to come out and walk out of that hospital and to be alive and to share. I'm sharing today because I have the energy to share. I didn't have the energy to share, or my mind wasn't ready to share, because I'm still processing. I'm still going to process. I want to be processing for a long time the things that are going in my spirit, my mind. And I even walked away for a moment. I walked away from all the things that I love to do and all the people that I love and care about, because you know what? I needed to find who I am and where I am. I needed to find me. I needed to see where I am. Where did I go? Am I lost in the system of the metaphysical and the holistic, in the religious aspects of my belief systems? Am I true to that? You know, this is where I want to go. If God's not in it, am I still able to do this work? You know, so, you know, for a lot of you know that I don't do any kind of spell work because I don't believe in it. You know, because I feel that that's not proper to put spells on people without consent or permission, because the karma will kick you in the freaking ass if you do that. And trust me, I've seen it. I learned very quickly and very fast that I don't do anything unless that third party's there. You know, because you know what? Even though I may have the insight, it's not really my person. This is just my belief. You can do what you want with the work you do. But in my insight, if I know something, is it for me to share or not share? I don't know. Because there's so many versions and so many things that can play out. In the position that a lot of people are in the metaphysical community, what comes out of our mouth, people hold on to it dearly. And they believe it. And then do we empower them or disempower them? Or do we give them an opportunity? But there are a lot of people who don't know that's an opportunity. But in the end, you have free will. You have the free choice to make your own decision, where you want to go, how you want to move, how you want to dance, how you want to evolve. You know, sometimes you have to go through the pain and suffer and to realize that. Now, I'm not here discounting people's, you know, abilities and beliefs, because that's theirs. I'm just talking about me here. And I'm sharing my story with you because we have to do reflection on the work we do. Being in the hospital taught me that. Being alone in there by myself, you know. I know everybody who didn't call me. I know everybody who wasn't involved in the process or didn't. And you know what? That leaves an impression in one's mind. It leaves an impression in one's heart. Now, I'm not mad at these people. Maybe they just don't have the capacity to communicate about certain things like that. And I honor that, respect that. But I learned very quickly and very fast that I have to, if I want something to happen in my life, if I want something to change in my life, nobody else can do it but me. I make the decisions. I pull the strings. That's it. If I want to be stuck living the way I'm living, then that's what I get. If I don't want to live this way, then I have to make decisions that would change it. And they're not comfortable sometimes. It's very uncomfortable. Sometimes I got to go, well, I don't want to live like this. But what you going to do different, Iggy? Well, I don't know. Well, Iggy, you're going to keep getting the same old crap if you keep doing the same old thing, driving the same old car. If you want more and you want something in your life, then you're going to have to really make some tough decisions that are uncomfortable, that may challenge your belief systems that you created. We create these worlds in our minds about who we think we are and what we are, but we're much grander and we're much more powerful than that. You know, we have so many excuses. I didn't realize how many excuses I had about why I was where I'm at and why I'm doing or not doing. And this is me sitting in the hospital. I'm going, well, jeez, man. No wonder I didn't do this. No wonder nothing. You know, then you go, maybe you don't want it to be that way. I go, this is true. Maybe that's true. Maybe this is why I don't want it to move in that direction. Because this is comfortable. This feels good. This shoe, as old as it is, feels good on my foot. It's molded and it's encapsulated and it feels great. Or these underwear that I've been wearing for 3 weeks, I don't want to change it because it just feels right now. But you know, that's kind of how we live in our minds. We do that. Some of us are able to move through the energy. Some of us are able to move and navigate. And others struggle. But the story here is that, you know what? I'm finding myself again. I'm finding new versions of myself. I'm finding new, you know, stories to rewrite, new stories to create. And I didn't realize that I had that much power, as much as I've been teaching this kind of work, empowerment work, excuse me, you know, I've been teaching this empowerment work, that I forgot to empower myself in the process, you know? And I'm just like, how did I forget myself, even though I'm sharing all this with everybody? It's because I got comfortable. I got comfortable where I was at. And, you know, comfort is, you take as, this is perfect. This, I don't need anymore. But yet you're like frustrated because you're not growing either, because you're not moving through the channels, you know, or I'm going down that river. And, you know, then you're taking on everybody else's stuff because everybody's sharing with you. And, you know, as an empath, everybody's an empath, so, and everybody's intuitive. So I'm going to make that very clear right now. A lot of people just don't know how to ground themselves. And especially when you hear those people who are like, oh, I'm so bad, I can't move. Well, you know what? You need to go hug a tree. Or you need to lay down on the ground until you get yourself pulled back together. The simplest tasks move you out. But see, I knew that. Because a teacher taught me that. A great teacher taught me that. He goes, what are you doing? You know? Well, I'm just drained for these people. They just drain me. And I'm like... It's because you're allowing them to drain you, and you don't know how to ground yourself. You don't know how to take that energy that doesn't belong to you, number one, that it's not yours to take, it's not yours to absorb, it's only for you to acknowledge and then ground away so you can do the process and help somebody, you know? But we all get stuck in our stories. That's a story. Oh, I can't move, you know? Because my shaman teacher told me that. He goes, you don't know how to ground. You don't know how to pull in the energy from Mother Earth to release that. You like your story. You like to be like that. You want people to see you like that. That's how you identify with yourself. He told me that. That's how you let people know that you're magical in that way. He was blunt. He was abrasive. And people call me abrasive and blunt sometimes. But it was a story that I remembered sitting in the hospital bed. because I got ticked off. I got ticked off because you know what? As perceived leader in the community, as people say, Iggy, you're a leader in the community, so you have to live to a standard that other people, and there's some truth to that. I get that. It doesn't mean that I'm not jealous. It doesn't mean that don't get upset. It doesn't mean that I don't feel have emotions or feelings. And I have made another post about appropriating someone else's culture when someone's doing ceremony. And the reason I said that is because people came into my home and appropriated my culture and was interrupting ceremonies. Then they should be respecting someone's ceremony because it looks like their teacher's ceremony. That's not right. You can't do that. And then when there's an elder from my country who comes to America and comes to Columbus, you're supposed to tell the shaman, hey, there's another shaman in the community, our community. Listen, because I'm recognized by the shamans in my community. Just like there are a lot of people in this metaphysical community, there's a lot of shamans that don't know other shamans. We don't assume because we see a shaman that all shamans know each other. Oh yeah, hey, how you doing? No, it doesn't work that way. That's idiotic thinking, you know? You invite, you say, hey, would like to invite you. This shaman. Now, unless the shaman refuses, that's a whole different story. But you should always invite any teacher who does similar work to the space so they can interact. Not to teach, it's there to learn. But the same people who come into my home and didn't do that, and then they came in and wanted to teach me another version of another person's work. That's appropriation. That's when you're bastardizing someone else's indigenous culture. No, you don't do that. Ignorance is bliss, I guess, right? It's kind of like ignorance of the law. There's no such thing. There's no ignorance of the spiritual laws either. You have to learn them, and you have to respect them and honor them. And you know what? And that's why part of me got sick too. Because I took it personal. And I'll tell you today, I took it personal because, it was a disrespect to the work I do and the teachings that I do. And they still had the audacity to come into my home and try to teach me something that I do differently because it's a family thing. Because there's different versions to do work. There's different ways to do cooking and sharing and praying. So when you try, when somebody comes and tries to tell you, and those of you who are learning this work, you're not doing it right. You just gotta have to smile sometimes because I'm gonna tell you right now. Number one, they probably didn't know what you're doing, and they're probably assuming. A lot of it is assumption, and that's why I don't like assumption in the work in the metaphysical community. There's different techniques to cut hair, right? There's different techniques to put makeup on. There's different styles to put makeup on. There's different ways to take a shower. There's different ways to pray to God. There's different ways to get to point A to point B. And to think that all indigenous ceremonies, especially for my culture, are supposed to be done the same way. Certain ones look similar, even though they're done the same way. That's a farce, man. It's a farce. And that's where people get in trouble. And that's where people get called out. And is this a call out? Yeah, absolutely. Because you know what? That will never happen again. I will never allow someone to disrespect me in my home, number one. And number two, violate other people's space. And it was very disheartening. Very disheartening. The things that occurred, they were seen and unseen on the 31st of January during a very sacred time. And I'm glad that happened because if it didn't happen, I would never know who the players are and the people who I now I know spirit. God, Spirit, Great Spirit, let me see the faces of the people who have been disrespecting me, or who don't have respect for the work I do, or, you know, they don't have respect for themselves. I would never go into someone's space and disrespect them. Ever. Ever, 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 ever. You know? You know, our work is very valuable. Our work is very precious. Our work is very spirit-oriented. And, you know, when you use the word spirit, make sure you know, you say which spirit you're talking about, because there's all kinds of spirits. I'm talking about the Great Spirit, the Great Creator. You know, when I say spirit, that's what I'm talking about. And I'm getting to the point where I have to just say Great Spirit. And I'm going to have to say that, because you know what? I want to invoke that energy. Got a little lazy there, you know? Because I assumed that people knew what I was talking about. That all indigenous cultures are, you know, they're as different as the person doing it. Every person, every human being is different. Every indigenous person is different, even though they learn technique. It's like a team, you know? You have a team of baseball players, and you got one guy who pitches with his right. You don't put him on the mound and say, hey, pitch with your left, because we want you to become a good left-handed pitcher. But you throw a 99-mile-an-hour ball with your right. Why in the heck would you want him to throw a ball with his left hand and he can only throw 40 miles an hour? Or get it across the plate at all? And there are other healers like that, too, who their gifts are tailored in spirit, has endowed them with that right to do it that way. So when you go to someone else's ceremonies, respect and honor their ceremonies. Learn. Be a student. Even if you've done it yourself, even if you think it should be done this way, learn. Then you have conversation after. You don't disrespect in the middle of a ceremony and do that. Because in some cases, someone will punch you in the nose or ask you to leave or embarrass you in front of everybody. Because that's happened. And yes, all indigenous people are not the same. Every tribes in this United States, every tribes in Peru are not all the same, my man and my woman. And that's the problem with people sometimes. They think that, oh, it's all Indian, it's all Native American, it's all indigenous, it's, oh, everybody's got a pipe, and now we're the buffalo this and buffalo that, you know. It's all different. Respect and honor that there's different ways to reach Creator. And, you know, all indigenous people do not celebrate the same way. And don't approach it the same way. Because they have their own belief systems, their own creation. It's like saying all Christian churches are the same. Yeah, all Christians are the same. They all believe in Jesus. You know, that's all, you know. But they all pray differently. They all approach the process differently. How they communicate and how they honor. Some have these mega churches. And they play rock and roll, and they're jamming, and they're praying. But they're all getting to the place, right, to that point where they want to get to that pinnacle point, where they want to save your soul. Where they want you to be one, you know, with Jesus, right? But yet they're all different. Why don't they all get along? Why don't they all? Then they have these little mini churches that have nothing to do. They're little Presbyterian churches that my wife grew up in. And they do it all different. So that's what I'm trying to teach. That's what I'm trying to share here. There are so many different religious ways of getting connected to God. And the same way it happens in indigenous cultures, in the native cultures, you know, we have different ways we communicate with God too. You know, it's an illusion that all Indian people do it the same way. No, it's not that way. All Hindus do it that way. No, it's not. There's different factions, different groups. You know, some get along and some don't. You know, the kind of work I do in shamanism that I do is family lineage, number one. Number two, I do it my way. I eliminate some things that I don't think that I want to share because they just don't resonate with me. If you want to learn that, you need to go to another teacher. Because I don't dwell in that stuff. I won't do anything that hurts somebody else. Because you know what? I've seen too many people get hurt to make a buck, you know? And you know, in the work we do, if the healer doesn't want to charge for his work, that's the healer's choice. But the healer, when he does his work or she does his work, they should be compensated for their work, for their time and their investment, and all the years of knowledge that they've accumulated and learned to do the work in the connection they have with spirit. Because you know, you all have the connection with spirit. I believe that all human beings have connection with great spirit. Now, other people just don't know how to grab that and harness that energy and become in tune with it. So they have to go to a healer. Most of the time, by the time someone gets to me, they're in bad shape and they've gone through a whole bunch of, you know, Western medicine and ideologies and beliefs, you know, and I take them to a drum circle and I'm like, oh, they're like, oh my God, I feel great. Why do they feel great? Because, you know, they have to remember, like the old shaman saying, when was the last time you danced? When was the last time you played? When was the last time you drummed? When's the last time you laughed? You know, when's the last time you gave someone a hug? When's the last time you received a hug? When's the last time you said thank you? When's the last time you said, you know, I see you? You know, when's the last time you just didn't just let go and be yourself? We live in such a stuffy world, and now the world is at odds with each other and fighting each other. People send me stuff, oh, this is happening, this is happening. I'm like, and I'm thinking to myself, that's always going to be happening. How do you survive? How are you going to live through it right now? How are you going to move through that energy? I told you a little part of my story. I didn't tell you everything, but I told you the pieces and parts that I think were valuable that I wanted to share. There's some other parts that I thought were that needed to be shared later on because I'm still processing through it. You know, I had survivor's guilt. You know, I felt guilty because I've lost friends while I was in the hospital who died of COVID. And I didn't even know they were sick. And when I got out, my uncle died the year before. You know, and I felt kind of guilty. You know, I was like, man, why do I feel guilt? Why do I feel like, because I was blessed, why weren't they blessed? I was thinking, you know, I was thinking all these things, man. I'm like, and I usually don't think like that. And I was thinking, man, why me? What? But you know, it wasn't really about me. It just wasn't my time. It wasn't my destiny yet. I had more to do. And you know, people say God has a plan for you. God has a plan for you. God gives you many plans. You have to decide which one you're going to jump on and which one you're going to do. You know, it's not like just going to fall on your lap. It's like the old story of the man, you know, in the flood, waiting for God to save him. A boat comes by. Guy says, hey, jump in. He goes, oh, I'm waiting for God to save me. And the boat goes away. And another guy comes with the boat. Boom. Oh, God's coming to save me. You know, I'm waiting. God's coming. You know, another third boat comes. And the guy goes, I'm still waiting. God's going to save me. And eventually the guy drowns. He dies because, you know, he gets to heaven. And you know, St. Peter's there, he goes, I don't know why I died, and I trusted in God and I prayed in God. And you know, St. Peter goes, hey, listen, God sent you three boats, okay? And you didn't jump on any of those boats. All right. I don't know how much clearer God could have been with you, but you should have jumped on one, two, or three. You know, at that point you have to make a decision. And this is kind of like life is. You know, we create these stories. We landlock ourselves in these stories, you know, of why we can't make it or why we can't move or get into the right frame of mind. We have so many excuses why we can't do things. And you know, I'm just here to tell you know, just do your best. Just do your best, you know, every day. And just be grateful and thankful for the little things you have in life. It could be your kids, it can be your dog, your cat, your mom, your dad. It could be anything. But just know that these are all blessings. These are all things that are for you to acknowledge and to be part of. Because you're a blessing to somebody else, too. You're magic to somebody else. You may not see it. You may never see it. But when you do see it, just know it's good to be here. You know what? When it's good to be here, it's bueno estar aquí. So, my friends, Thank you for this time and this opportunity to share. It felt good to get online and share again and talk with you guys. I love you very much. Ho'oponopono matakwiasin. It's good to be here. And I'll see you next time. And with that, I want to say a ho. Take care and have a blessed evening. And we'll see you next time on Iggy Garcia Live.